Good morning, everyone. Monday, May the 2nd, 2011, at 11:35 p.m., then President Barack Obama, he addressed the nation. And I'm going to read a little bit of what he said. This is the president speaking. He says, "Good evening. Tonight I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children. It was nearly 10 years ago that a bright September day was darkened by the worst attack on the American people in our history. The images of 9/11 are seared into our national memory. Hijacked planes cutting through a cloudless September sky. The Twin Towers collapsing to the ground. Black smoke billowing up from the Pentagon. The wreckage of Flight 93 in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where the actions of heroic citizens saved even more heartbreak and destruction. And yet we know that the worst images are those that were unseen to the world. The empty seat at the dinner table. Children who were forced to grow up without their mother or their father. Parents who would never know the feeling of their child's embrace. Nearly 3,000 citizens taken from us, leaving a gaping hole in our hearts. On September 11, 2001, in our time of grief, the American people came together. We offered our neighbors a hand, and we offered the wounded our blood. We reaffirmed our ties to each other and our love of community and country." We drop on down a bit. He says, "Today, at my direction, the United States launched a targeted operation against that compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan. A small team of Americans carried out the operation with extraordinary courage and capability. No Americans were harmed. They took care to avoid civilian casualties. After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body. Yet his death does not mark the end of our effort. There's no doubt that Al-Qaeda will continue to pursue attacks against us. We must and we will remain vigilant at home and abroad." A little later he says, "The American people did not choose this fight. It came to our shores and started with the senseless slaughter of our citizens. After nearly 10 years of service, struggle, and sacrifice, we know well the cost of war. We give thanks for the men who carried out this operation, for they exemplify the professionalism, patriotism, and unparalleled courage of those who serve our country. And they are a part of a generation that has borne the heaviest share of the burden since that September day." He goes on to address the families of those who lost loved ones and complete his remarks. Osama bin Laden was killed because he was a terrorist. A vision of a better world developed in the minds of Americans, and it did not include Osama bin Laden. He was a vile, evil murderer, and he had to be dealt with. In the words of one Navy SEAL, the threat was neutralized. Osama bin Laden was exterminated. Now, in his speech, the president, he referred to a small team of Americans who carried out the operation with extraordinary courage and capability. This was a team of Navy SEALs, a super-trained, elite squad of warriors who were willing to give their life because of their vision of a better world. They saw a vision of a world without bin Laden in it. And in order to succeed in obtaining that vision of a better world, they had to complete their mission. They had to go in, and they had to complete the mission of killing bin Laden. Now, the last time I spoke with you, we talked about beginning with the end in mind. And we read those scriptures in Isaiah and Ezekiel and Revelation that paints a picture of that world that we long for. A vision of God's kingdom, a vision of a world without terrorists, a vision of a world of peace. That is our vision. And that's the kingdom, that's the vision that we are striving for. And at the end of that split sermon, I said, our mission now is to do the work of overcoming. And that's what I want to talk about today, our mission of overcoming. I want to look at three specific aspects of that mission. And today, I'm going to paint with a broad brush because each of these aspects you could give many sermons on. You could spend a lot of time on each one of them. But I think we'll get the point. Jesus Christ was speaking to the churches in Revelation 2 and 3. And Christ says to those who overcome, He says, here's what I'm going to do for you. And you read through each church. But it's to those who overcome, those who complete their mission, those who put the work in now. So our mission is to overcome. Our vision of God's kingdom, that perfect world, that's what motivates us. That's the reason why we do what we do. But our mission is to overcome. Our mission is to put the work in now while we have time. So overcome what? And this is where we begin to define what our mission is. Our mission is to overcome sin. Our mission is to overcome self. And our mission is to overcome Satan. And we'll take some time and we'll look at each of these aspects of our mission. Now, before we get into those three aspects, I want to make just a few points. First of all, each and every one of us in this room, we are warriors. We are enlisted in the army of God, and we are warriors. If you will, turn to Ephesians chapter 6. We'll begin in verse 10. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 10, he says, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. If we are not warriors, why do we need armor? We are warriors. We are enlisted to become elite warriors, just like those Navy SEALs who went and killed Bin Laden. We are enlisted to become elite warriors. The second point I want to make is that we all live in a world under the sway of a terrorist, Satan the devil. Verse 12, it says, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. We indeed are engaged in a war. We wake up each and every day and we go into battle. And if we're smart, we have Christ with us. We go into battle each and every day. Then the third point I want to make, that we will win. In the end, we do win. If you will, turn over to Numbers chapter 10. Numbers chapter 10. We'll look at verse 9. Numbers chapter 10 and verse 9, it says, when you go to war in your land against the enemy who oppresses you, we have an enemy, Satan the devil. And he oppresses us each and every day. He oppresses the world each and every day. We are in a war, a struggle for life and death. It's imperative that we complete our mission. It says, when you go to war in your land against the enemy who oppresses you, then you shall sound an alarm with the trumpets, and you will be remembered before the Lord your God. I would submit that each and every day we need to pray to God and ask Him to go into battle with us. It needs to be a part of our daily ritual. It needs to be something that we think about each and every day, because Satan thinks about it every day. Satan thinks about it all day, every day. What can he do to destroy each one of us? He, by and large, has the world under his sway. And those of us who have been called out, those of us who are trying to be something different, he's trying his best to destroy us. And then the last sentence of verse 9, it says, and you will be saved from your enemies. At the end of the day, God and Christ are victorious. We can be victorious through them. And so those are things that we need to keep in mind as we talk about what our mission is. We can win. So let's look at the first part of our mission, overcoming sin. Overcoming sin. Now, we are not novices here. We are all very keenly aware that we are sinners. The Passover and the days of unleavened bread, they make us aware of that. And each and every day we are aware of that. We know that we are not perfect. But it also makes us aware that we can overcome sin. Through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, through the redemption that's offered through His blood, through the teaching and training that they offer to us, God and Christ, we can be victorious over sin. We can overcome sin. We have to allow Christ to guide us, to lead us into that overcoming. Now, I want to look at just a few scriptures because, again, we could go through countless sermons that talks about overcoming sin and here's how you overcome sin. But there's just a few points that I think that if we'll keep in our mind consistently, it will help us in overcoming. If you will, turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 13. 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5. We've already read this during this season, but I think it's important to read it again. 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5. It says, examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. And we'll stop right there. If each and every day we examine ourselves, we test ourselves. And we test ourselves against Jesus Christ because Jesus Christ is the perfect example. And we all know that. He is the only one that we can test ourselves against, because He was perfect in everything that He did. So if each and every day we ask ourselves, we examine ourselves, where am I in relation to Jesus Christ? None of us will ever meet the standard, not in this life. But hopefully, ideally, we can begin to think about it. We can begin to explore the things that have been shown to us, and we train, and we overcome, and we focus on those sins that we have. And again, this becomes a part of our daily routine. We constantly think about where we are. We examine ourselves. Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. Jesus Christ is speaking to the church at Laodicea. He says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and dine with him, and he with me. Jesus Christ is there. He wants to have a relationship with us. He wants to work with us. He wants to train us. But we have to make a place where he can come in and dwell. We have to be repenting. We have to be changing. We have to be willing to give up our lives for his, so that he can come in and dwell with us. The only way to consistently overcome sin is to have Jesus Christ dwelling inside of us. His Spirit guiding us, leading us, training us, teaching us each and every day. And Jesus Christ is more than willing to do that for us, but we have to be engaged in the fight. We have to wake up and we have to go into the battle each and every day. And Christ is telling us, he says, I'm knocking on the door. I want to come into you. I want to have this relationship with you. And we have to open that door and we have to say, come on in. I need your help. Because that's the only way we will succeed. Ronnie spoke about that on the first Holy Day. And it's absolutely true. We have to have Jesus Christ dwelling inside of us. The Navy SEALs, they have something that they teach. It's called front sight focused. Front sight focused. And what it is, in their riflery training, there's two sights on the gun. So they have one that brings everything kind of into the picture. But then that front sight, that's what puts you right on the target. It brings everything right in to that point. It excludes everything else that's around. And when they squeeze off that trigger, they're dead on point. Every time. Because they train over and over and over. And that's what we have to do. We have to be front sight focused. We have to exclude what's unimportant. And we have to focus completely on what's important. I'll give you an example of this. Let's turn to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus 23, we'll look at verse 6 through 8. This is why we're here today. Leviticus 23, verse 6, it says, "And on the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it." We have done that. On the first day. "But you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it." And that's what we're doing today. We are here. We're observing the last day of unleavened bread. God commanded this assembly. And we have focused on this. Throughout this Passover season, we focused on Passover. We focused on the sacrifice that Jesus Christ made for us. We focused on unleavened bread. We focused on putting sin out of our lives. We've examined ourselves, and here's where I need to grow. Here's where I need to train. And we focused on that. And today, to the exclusion of everything else, to the exclusion of work, of family, whatever might be going on, we have focused on God's holy day. We are here because God commanded. But do we lose focus sometimes? Because if you back up to verse 2, he says, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feast." Then in verse 3, he says, "6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings." It's a commanded holy convocation every single week. God says to be there. Do we get familiar with that? Because it's every week. The annual holy days, we make room for that. We focus on that because it's once a year. We don't want to miss that. But God's Sabbath, do we get a little lax with it because it's every week? And the application applies to any sin. It's not just the Sabbath. Do we get familiar with sin? Does it make it okay in our life just because we're familiar with it? Well, we all know the answer to that. We all know the answer to that. So, that's just one example, but it's something that we have to keep in mind about overcoming sin. So, the first part of our mission is to overcome sin. Now, the second part of our mission is overcoming self. Overcoming self. John C. Maxwell, he said, "If your vision doesn't cost you something, it's only a daydream." Our vision of God's kingdom is going to cost us something. Our vision of God's kingdom is going to cost us our lives as we know it. That life that we once lived of feeding every whim, every fancy, taking care of ourselves, that life is going to be gone. We have to change. Matthew chapter 16, again, we've read this before, but it expresses this point quite clearly. Matthew chapter 16, verse 24 and 25, says, "Then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Overcoming self It ultimately means becoming a servant. It means submitting to the will of God over our own. And as we begin to serve God, as we begin to serve Christ, and we submit to their will, then that becomes a part of who we are, and we begin to serve one another. And as we serve one another, then we begin to serve humanity. Because that's who Jesus Christ is. Jesus Christ is a servant. Now, Matthew chapter 20, just a few pages over, Matthew chapter 20, verse 25 through 28, says, "But Jesus called them to himself and said, 'You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. They take care of themselves first. They make sure that everybody's doing exactly what they want them to do.'" Hold your place here. Let's turn over to Exodus chapter 5. Exodus chapter 5. Exodus chapter 5 and verse 4 says, "Then the Lord said to Moses," reach up. I'm in the wrong chapter. Exodus chapter 5, verse 4. It says, "Then the king of Egypt said to them, 'Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people from their work? Get back to your labor.' And Pharaoh said, 'Look, the people of the land are many now, and you make them rest from their labor.' So the same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, 'You shall no longer give the people straw to make brick, and as before, let them go and gather straw for themselves, and you shall lay on them the quota of bricks which they made before. You shall not reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry out, saying, Let us go and sacrifice to our God.'" There's these people who's wanting to do right. They're wanting to live right, but they are under a taskmaster. And Pharaoh, all he's concerned about is these people are his slaves. He wants them to do exactly what he wants them to do. He doesn't care about who they are. He doesn't care about their interest. And in the 430 years they had been there, how many had been beaten and scourged and killed? We don't know. It's not recorded. But Pharaoh wanted them to serve him. And that's what the Gentiles do. Christ says, they lord it over you. Back to Matthew chapter 20. Verse 26, he says, "Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." Jesus Christ set a perfect example of service. He demonstrated that agape love that we are all trying to learn about. And as a disciple of Jesus Christ, we need to emulate that. That's what we do. And agape love, simply defined, is seeking the ultimate good for all of those around me. In a nutshell, it's basically that we sacrifice our lives for the good of everyone else. We give up what we might want. We give up what we might desire to make the lives of everyone else better. Now, we can't do it, obviously, at the cost of sin. But we look at what people need, and we sacrifice ourselves for their needs. And that's what Jesus Christ did for us. That's exactly what he did when he gave his life for us. He served us in that way. And it's hard to think in my mind about Jesus Christ being a servant. He's King. He's God. But he asked us to emulate that, to develop that character. And that's what we're going to take out of this life. Now, when it comes to service, we have to be very careful about what our motivation is. Is our motivation extrinsic? Or is it intrinsic? Is it inside of us? Matthew chapter 23. Matthew chapter 23, verse 5, we'll read one sentence. It says, "But all their works they do to be seen by men." Their motivation for any works, any service that they did, was to get an attaboy, to get a pat on the back, to be seen, to be recognized, to be in a position of authority of some type. But if you drop down to verse 11, Christ says, "But he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. And whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." It's an intrinsic motivation because we love God, because we love Christ. And all we really want to do is to serve them, to emulate them, to be like them. And through that service to God and Christ, we serve one another. Because it's who Christ is. And that motivation is from within. We don't do it to be seen. We don't do it to be recognized. We just do it because it's a need. It's a need that has to be filled. So when we think about overcoming self, we have to become a servant. And the third part of our mission is overcoming Satan. Overcoming Satan. Let's turn to John chapter 12, verse 31. John chapter 12, verse 31. It says, "Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out." Jesus Christ, through His perfect life, through His murder, and through His resurrection, He has defeated Satan. The war is won. Now, Satan hasn't been bound yet. His influence still exists in the earth. His influence is still a part of what we live in each and every day. So when we talk about overcoming Satan, we're talking about a complete rejection of Satan. A complete rejection of how this world thinks, of how this world acts. The greed that's associated with it, the lust that's associated with it, the self-serving. Everybody looks out for themselves. And Jesus Christ said for us to be the exact opposite of that. Let's turn back to the book of Exodus, chapter 5, again. Exodus 5, look at verse 1 and 2. Exodus chapter 5, verse 1, it says, Afterward Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness." And Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go." You see this pride and this arrogance that's in Pharaoh. And we know that Pharaoh is the representation of Satan the devil. And that same pride and that same arrogance is what caused Satan's sin, what caused his demise, what caused him to be cast to earth. And he has been given a small window of opportunity to do what he can to destroy this earth. And that's all he cares about. That's all he cares about. We drop on down to verse 22. It says, "So Moses returned to the Lord and said, 'Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all.'" So we remember he told them that, look, you need to keep the same quota of brick, but I'm not going to give you the straw that I've been giving you. And their lives got harder initially. But then we get to chapter 6. In verse 1 through 8, God tells us what He's going to do for us. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand he will let them go, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land.' And God spoke to Moses and said to him, 'I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty, but by my name Lord I was not known to them. I have also established my covenant with them, to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage in which they were strangers. And I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant.'" We are not here because we are anything exceptional or great. We are here because of a promise God made, and He honors that promise. Now, God is allowing us to come out of this world. It's a part of the calling that He extends to us. But it's not because of anything that we are or anything that we've done. Verse 6, he says, "Therefore say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I will give it to you as a heritage. I am the Lord." We see in these verses an entire rejection of this world system. Egypt represents the world, Pharaoh representing Satan. And God says, you know what, I'm going to deliver you from all of that. And ultimately that deliverance comes when Jesus Christ returns, stands on the Mount of Olives, and His kingdom is established on this earth. Satan is bound. But each and every day we have the opportunity to live in peace, to live in contentment, because we have a relationship with God in Christ. We're able to overcome Satan because of that relationship, because of their spirit living inside of us, teaching us, guiding us, telling us all the things that we need to do, every little step of the way. They're right there with us. Verse 9, this is something we have to be aware of. It says, "So Moses spoke thus to the children of Israel, but they did not heed Moses because of anguish of spirit and cruel bondage." How many of us lose our focus when the heat gets turned up a little bit? We start going through a trial, whatever it might be, and we give in to the anguish of spirit and we lose sight of God. We lose that focus on His kingdom and we give in to that. We have to ask ourselves, do we heed what God says to do, or do we give in to what Satan wants us to give in to, that anguish of spirit? Do we give in to that? Our mission of overcoming Satan is accomplished by living a complete, full, joyful, righteous life in God in Christ. Because of the calling that they've given to us, because of the relationship that they allow us to be in, because of their spirit that dwells within us, it's their fundamental nature that regardless of what's going on, we can have peace, we can have contentment. Because life is not going to be easy, and Satan is not going to allow it to be easy. Satan is relentless, and he goes to war every day. Every single day. We defeat Satan when we live this life, and every time that we talk about God's kingdom, every time we preach that good news, that gospel of God's kingdom to ourselves, to someone in the world, to anybody, anywhere, we defeat Satan just a little bit more. And we build God's kingdom up in our mind and in who we are, because it's important to us. It's what we do. It's who we are. And it becomes a part of our character. And that's how we overcome Satan. I want to begin closing. This is a book, The Way of the Seal. It's written by Mark Divine. On page 16 and 17, it's a United States Navy SEAL ethos, and I'm going to read this to you. And as I read through it, I want you to listen to what's said, and I want you to kind of contemplate who we are, contemplate our calling, contemplate some of the things that we go through. It says, "This is the stand that every SEAL learns. In times of war or uncertainty, there is a special breed of warrior ready to answer our nation's call. A common man with uncommon desire to succeed. Forged by adversity, he stands alongside America's finest special operations forces to serve his country, the American people, and protect their way of life. I am that man. My trident is a symbol of honor and heritage. bestowed upon me by the heroes that have gone before. It embodies the trust of those I have sworn to protect. By wearing the trident, I accept the responsibility of my chosen profession and way of life. It is the privilege that I must earn every day. My loyalty to country and team is beyond reproach. I humbly serve as a guardian to my fellow Americans, always ready to defend those who are unable to defend themselves. I do not advertise the nature of my work nor seek recognition for my actions. I voluntarily accept the inherent hazards of my profession, placing the welfare and security of others before my own. I serve with honor on and off the battlefield. The ability to control my emotions and my actions, regardless of circumstance, sets me apart from other men. Uncompromising integrity is my standard. My character and honor are steadfast. My word is my bond. We expect to lead and to be led. In the absence of orders, I will take charge, lead my teammates, and accomplish the mission. I lead by example in all situations. I will never quit. I persevere and thrive on adversity. My nation expects me to be physically harder and mentally stronger than my enemies. If knocked down, I will get back up every time. I will draw on every remaining ounce of strength to protect my teammates and to accomplish our mission. I am never out of the fight. We demand discipline. We expect innovation. The lives of my teammates and the success of our mission depend on me, my technical skill, tactical proficiency, and attention to detail. My training is never complete. We train for war and fight to win. I stand ready to bring the full spectrum of combat power to bear in order to achieve my mission and the goals established by my country. The execution of my duties will be swift and violent when required, yet guided by the very principles that I serve to defend. Brave men have fought and died, building the proud tradition and feared reputation that I am bound to uphold. In the worst of conditions, the legacy of my teammates steadies my resolve and silently guides my every deed. I will not fail. That's written by men, but I think there's a lot of applications to what we do. We are citizens of heaven. We have a responsibility. We are common people with an uncommon calling. We have to complete our mission. We are never out of the fight. We cannot fail.